Marty Morrissey, weekdays from 3pm, RTE Radio 1.
Now, after the repossession man came for his stereo, a young Dubliner hit a low point in his life. Then he became homeless, in inverted commas. He thought of himself as a hopeless case. But he was a hopeless case with a flair for designing gardens. Within a few years, he collected medals for his work. After his designs featured in the 1995 Chelsea Flower Show, he has never looked back. He is now a leader in his field, with two large and lavish projects underway in Monaco and the Czech Republic. And I'm delighted to say he's a friend of mine. McGavin.
Great to see you, Marty. Super.
That's a pretty impressive introduction, if I can say. But we'll talk about that now later on, because your career is truly remarkable. But I know now from being in contact with you, you live on planes. Every time I ring you or text you, you're in some far-flung project. So what have you got on at the moment?
We work an awful lot outside of Ireland. I suppose we're working in throughout the UK, but in Prague, and a lot in the south of France, in places like Aix and La Turbie and Monaco, Singapore, places like that. So it's always somewhere else, never at home.
It's remarkable. I mean, how did that, excuse the pun now, but how did that mushroom for you from being a garden designer to being all over the world?
I wanted to do gardens that were different. I found an outlet for that at the Chelsea Flower Show in London in the mid-90s, I suppose, and then some television shows. And from that, you meet a lot of architects and whatever, and they recommend you to clients, and they work kind of universally. So there's a big architect in London called, a Czech national called Iva Jirinka, who came over in the 60s and 70s, and she's quite remarkable. So wherever she has a project, we will go and do the gardens and for, you know, other architects. So.
And I know you've done loads of interviews, and but just to recap, even from my own knowledge, where did this talent, this flair come from? Was it something you had as a young fella? Because, you know, we've three great singers and a keyboard player with us. And, you know, you get your lessons. You have a natural talent, you get your lessons. But your creative mind is so outside the norm.
I just always wanted to change places, and I love being outdoors. And was you lived near where I grew up, I think, near Bushy Park in
Rathfarnham. Yeah.
And that park to me was a playground as a kid. And I remember I must have been about 8, and I brought my sisters, who were 3 and 5, behind me, and we raided my dad's shed of shovels and spades and whatever, crossed the river, the bridge, into the woodland, and I'd carve out gardens in a park.
Really?
On the south side of Dublin. So I just always wanted to do it. I saw Percy Thrower, do you remember him, on Blue Peter? He was a Gardener's World guy, and every year he'd come over for the St. Patrick's Day Parade and be on the Borna Mona float. And all of that, I saw him do the first Blue Peter garden, an Italianate sunken garden. And from all of that, I just wanted to, you know, create gardens that were different. And of course, we live in such a wonderful country with our mild climate. We can grow plants from all around the world. And because the British were here for so long, they brought lots of money. We had the ascendancy classes, and they created gardens with different inspirations and brought ideas in. So our gardening heritage, be it through the plants we can grow or the styles that were imported, were very big. I wanted to figure out my own way of doing it, though, and I wanted to do gardens. I grew up in suburban Dublin in a concrete pebble-dashed box, and I didn't see why we would have to shoehorn some classical style of garden into small spaces. You know, when you were watching Sue Ellen having breakfast in South Fork by the pool, or even Neighbours or whatever, the outdoor lifestyle really appealed to me, but something that was relevant to the way we now live. So I wanted to have fun with it.
Well, you certainly have, and you've been recognised and acknowledged worldwide. Thus, the lad from Rathfarnham is in Monaco, and you're also in Prague, I believe, doing a project there, aren't you?
We're just coming to the end of a very large project for an oligarch over in Prague, in a site that dominates the city. And this guy, he's like a James Bond baddie, and he scares me. And his only words of English when we met him were, "No flowers, no flowers."
Wow. Didn't want anything. No flowers? And he was booking you?
he didn't know what he wanted, but he wanted something. He has this extraordinary house of, you know, glass. It looks a bit like Stansted Airport, on a site that really dominates, and everybody in the Czech Republic knows him. So we had to create a sculptural landscape for him. And it can be difficult working in different territories, because, right, we have you know, ideas that are different. We generally would use a crew called Outlook Gardens, Dermot Kearns, who's originally from Kenmare in
County
Kerry. So they travel around and create our gardens. We left it to a local crew there, which didn't really work. It's just, you know, a month before Christmas, we were drafting in lads from Wexford to finish off. But it worked a treat, and it's a great opportunity. And of course, you learn about different cultures, you live in different places, always fun, but always great to get back home.
Absolutely. We got that introduction, by the way, or inspired it to us, because you described yourself in the Sunday Independent recently as having once been a bit of a hopeless case. Explain that, because it's a remarkable journey.
I think if you're a dreamer, I think if you have an idea, like when I went to school, I always knew I'd be okay, but I wasn't particularly interested in learning Irish or mathematics or any of these things. And unless you, I think there's a problem with education, unless you conform to a certain way, or, you know, if you're lucky that you go to a creative school or a place that's different, that's one thing. But I didn't conform to the norms of education. I was happy enough myself I didn't, because I felt, well, you know, I wasn't stupid, and I'd get to do what I wanted to do. Anything I was interested in, I really kind of dedicated myself to.
And you probably excelled in that. Were you good at art now, for instance?
No, I was. I found the art room a refuge, but I wasn't great at art because I'd learned I didn't have discipline. I went and did pottery, studied pottery in Trinity for many years. And yeah, I wasn't bad at that, but I always wanted to go my own way. And whatever they were instructing, I'd never really listen. I'd want to make it up my way.
Yeah, I've always loved meeting people like you, because, you know, we all follow, well, a lot of us, most of us, not say all, follow an academic life. The three lads in front of me are obviously gifted singers, which I'd be hopeless at music, although I'm good in the chorus at late at night. But you know, to go through the academic journey, I always think about that young person who might want to do what you've done. It mightn't be in the designing garden, but some other area.
Yes.
And our education system, the teachers who are doing it are just fantastic at, I think, allowing people like you when you were a young fella, and others I know, to follow their dream and maybe guide them and pursue it.
I think it's much better now, because, you know, I grew up into Ireland was very, very different back then. You were we were, as a nation, I suppose we were finding our feet. We'd been through turbulent years. Dublin was still a great place back in the 70s and 80s. There wasn't confidence. We always looked across the water. And then you had people from Ireland who began to achieve, and we loosened up a little bit, who began to achieve on the world stage, and things began to change. It is an awful lot more confidence here now. We feel an awful lot more European, and because of instant media, we're influenced by everything at the same rate that everybody else is. So we begin to stand on our, you know, our own 2 feet, and we begin maybe to celebrate the dreamer a little bit, or the person who has different ideas. I always think of, you know, that hat maker from Galway, Philip Tracy.
Yes.
Now, there's a true genius. And how did he come true? And
you're not taught that at school.
No,
not far as I know.
I think he was. There were people who were mentors to him, and he had one of those lucky upbringings, and people who appreciated that he might have been different in one way, but he was creative, and that should be encouraged. And wonderful.
One of the people who turned things around for you, I believe, was Terry Keane.
Yeah, she was an extraordinary influence in my life. I had won a medal at the RDS Spring Gardening Show, and Terry always was on the lookout for young... Actually, she discovered Philip Tracy when he was in his final year in the National College of Art and Design, and mentored him and promoted him and whatever. And when eventually I met him in London, he said, I'll do anything for anybody with any relationship to Terry. So she commissioned me to create a garden. I was petrified. I was... because she was writing
this
column. Well, it wasn't my first gig, but it was, you know, she was an important person, and she was a journalist, and of great influence. But also, she was highly cultured, very artistic, and whatever. So going to create a garden that Helen Dillon had, she didn't let me design it because my ideas were a bit wacky. But she, Helen Dillon, who lived on the same road in Ranelagh, sketched out a plan on the back of an envelope, and I created the garden for for myself and some friends, and she turned out to be a huge influence on my life.
A very big influence, because obviously you fell in love with her daughter. And,
that was sometime later, yes. As with many people, if you went near the Keane household, you never escaped. she was quite wonderful. The amazing thing about, I was used to cycling around or driving around in my battered van around Dublin and whatever, and doing gardens for people and been shown the tradesman's entrance and whatever, and I'd come out and not approval or whatever. With the Keane family, was completely different. I worked very hard. I was absolutely dedicated to, I just loved changing shape and very excited with the prospect of creating any garden. So I'd be often starting early in the morning, finishing late at night. If the family were eating breakfast or if they were having a glass of wine at the end of the day, whoever you were, if you were the electrician in the kitchen or if you were invited in and you there was no ceremony and you took part in their setup, if Terry was having a party, you might feel very out of place as a kind of girl. But then you soon discovered that you met the most wonderful people there. And yes, then eventually, a year or two later, Justin and myself got together.
Now, obviously, Terry was depicted in the series Charlie. What was your view of that? What was your family's view of your mother-in-law being depicted the way she was?
I suppose Terry, she was a prominent individual, and she was a part of Irish life when Irish life was changing. We didn't watch because whoever was writing or acting or filming or directing or whatever, didn't know Terry, and so we know Terry, and she was a wonderful mom, dearly miss Granny, and the most incredible help to me, and that's how I will remember her. It was because of Terry. When everybody else told me, go and dig some gardens or cut hedges or whatever, and she was the one that said, no, go to the Chelsea Flower Show. If you have a dream, you do it. And I'll do everything in my power. So every friend she had, she wrote to and whatever, and tried to help me right along the way, and always remain that person. I remember years later, I was doing television shows over in England because things worked out for me. And Terry, all the kids had left home, and Terry was living on her own in a Georgian house in Dublin. Didn't like that and felt a bit vulnerable, a little bit older on her own in Dublin City and whatever. And she rang me at one stage in London and she said, I think there's somebody, breaking into the house or whatever, or certainly in the garden, and I've noticed things. So I got a friend of mine, Sean, to pop down and to go and meet her. And she said to Sean, I think in the shed, I have a feeling there's something going on, and I'm too scared to go down to the basement and have a look. So Sean went down with her and tiptoed down. And indeed, they opened the door of the shed, and there was signs of somebody having been in there, not only been in there, living there, a sleeping bag and whatever. And Sean said to me, anybody else would have told them to put a new lock on the shed and make sure the gates were. She was, oh God, the poor devil, whoever he is. And she said, right, come down to the shops with me. And they went down to the shops and she bought food. And she said, now Sean, what sort of sandwiches do you think they'd want? He was reading the Telegraph. I think maybe tuna sandwiches.
What really?
And that was the type of person that Terry was. She didn't care for many of the things you would think. She didn't care for, important, pompous people. She liked creative, artistic people, and she was always there to give somebody a handout. She was remarkable.
So obviously Terry Keane, a very kind woman and a great mother-in-law.
A great mother-in-law, and also, it could be hell.
Now the truth is emerging.
She was always, did you ever see that?
I'm not going to tell a Brendan Grace joke now, are you?
You know that Patsy and what was that programme?
Absolute
Fab. That was Terry and her friend Noel Campbell-Sharp. That was them to a tee. And Terry, the worst thing that could happen from Terry was coming back after a trip to New York. She loved traveling, she loved being away. But when she came back, there was a dark cloud that descended on her for a couple of days. So she's absolutely wonderful, but as temperamental as me.
You're not temperamental, dear McGavin. Dear McGavin, talking about his late mother-in-law, Terry Keane, a very kind woman and a good mother-in-law, obviously. We'll be right back.
Marty Morrissey, weekdays from 3 p.m. RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. Loads of texts coming in, particularly for Diarmaid, and indeed to lovely compliments. Can we hear more from the Irish Tenors Ireland, may I add? So that's coming in as well. Hi, Marty. I fished a cast iron bed, the top and bottom, out of the skip in the recycle centre yesterday. They're a lovely yellow and they're genuine antiques. I'm thinking about putting them in the garden. Has Diarmaid any ideas? It's a new house with a small garden. Margaret.
A cast iron?
Cast iron bed, the top and the bottom, yeah. Out of the skip.
Yeah, well,
raised beds.
Raised beds, perfect. There you
go. Ta-da. Ta-da. There's a real team effort going on here.
I don't know what's it. I suppose it looks good for a certain type of folky garden with geraniums hanging out of them and sort of anything quirky is always a bit of fun.
Yeah, it was a bit of fun. Just listening to your show with Diarmaid, I haven't seen him since I made the sculptures for his spring show garden way back. Say hi for me from Conrad Deschant.
Oh, he was fantastic. He made two otters swirling up and for a garden that we won a gold medal with, and Mary Robinson had just been elected president. She came and presented, and I felt she represented so much in terms of change in the garden. So hello, Conrad. I think he lived below me in a flat in Ranelagh, the same flat.
Same flat in Is it true that your stereo was repossessed? Is that true?
It was, yeah. When I wasn't, I could always build beautiful gardens, so I'd go along to the shows and win a medal every year and whatever, but I wanted to do gardens that were different. I was really driven, so I started doing my everything badly. If your dreams are just wasted away. I wasn't young at the time either. I was, you know, mid-20s when you should really be on your road for life, so couldn't pay the rent eventually. But when the guy came to repossess from, I think, RTV Rentals in Rathmines, a stack system, and he'd never repossessed a stack, and he just looked at me. He wasn't giving out to me, but just so sadly. The following day morning, Saturday morning, I had to leave the flat. So, yeah, those weren't good days.
That was a sad day. Your stereo going out the door.
Well, the stereo, and what was worse was the only thing I had were a few clothes. A friend of mine, Vincent Barnes from Crumlin, he brought the clothes in black plastic sacks to his dad's garage in Crumlin, and they were left there, and I'd spend a few nights here, and eventually his dad was doing something in the garage, so my clothes were in somebody's back garden in black plastic bags, been rained on, and dozens. And when you're down that low, you just take tiny steps and you decide, when you let down so many people, you decide, right, only one direction to go in, and start doing things properly, and that's the sort of the climb back, I suppose.
Well, fair play to you now, and look at where you are today, Gavin. You're stuck with us. Could be the immediate response. But in fairness, you've done really, really well. Anyway, we have more from Diarmaid and his life and indeed his career, as we have indeed with the Irish Tenors.
Marty Morrissey, weekdays from 3 p.m, RTE Radio 1.
Now, certainly here on the screen, every time we go on, they're telling me here, loads of texts coming in for you, Diarmaid Gavin, loads of questions. And but let me ask you this, in terms of what you do now, so much abroad, how many people would you employ?
There's about 25 lads, mainly from home, working, based in the south of France. From there, they would go off to the jobs in, as I say, we're about to start in Harrods in London, creating a
really?
Roof gardens. Yeah.
Where? Up on the roof,
I presume? Up on the roof. On a terrace just below the roof. You or I will never get there. It's just for royal families. It's extraordinary. They get their own suites when they come in, private shopping. They'll have their own elevator from street level. So from there, they'd go to that one, as I say, Prague, and all around on the coast of the River area, and a new project in Monaco. So a lot of lads from home who live in extraordinary places over there. I was just telling you, Sean is from Leitrim. He'll kill me. Sean is from Carrick and Shannon, Leitrim. Actually, he lives in Jamestown, which I tell him is always Roscommon, which he hates. But anyway, that's a different story. So he's been living out there for about a year, and he's an absolute genius. He built all the gardens for me on the Homefront series, and they would get on. They have endeared themselves to everybody in these towns along the Riviera coast. And there's a little restaurant in front of them where they'd have breakfast or dinner. And Sean says to me, yeah, I went in there and the lad, he kissed me on both cheeks. I'm sure he didn't mean anything. But it's not a custom he'll be bringing back to Jamestown.
No, I think there'll be a different response in Jamestown and Roscommon, our Leitrim indeed. But would there be a desire to do more work in Ireland?
I think we'd love to. A lot of the lads would have, you know, the younger kids would love to see their dads a little bit more. There might be the impression that we're unobtainable or elsewhere, but we would still, we love Croydon Gardens in Ireland. We have a couple of projects. We've a lovely one coming up in Belfast, and we'll be working in Galway shortly. But if anybody wants their garden done, yeah, we're around it.
Tim McGavin.
With French accents now, then.
With French accents, yes.
And a kiss on both cheeks.
Merci, yes. Well, thank you very much, Tim. Stay with us right after this.
Marty Morrissey, weekdays from 3 p.m. RTE Radio 1.
Dear McGavin, 2015, apart from Harrods.
Margaret Thatcher's garden.
We're
a bit short on Margaret Thatcher's, the garden, the house that she raised her family in. So that's the next project. And just more of the same, I have a new series with Helen Dillon, who designed Terry's garden originally, starting soon. And yeah, lots more fun.
Okay, well, thank you, dear McGavin, for coming in to us, the three tenors, Ireland, and Gillian indeed on keyboard, and all our guests below and for Moy, and congratulations to Dervla and Tim. Sorry, lads, you didn't get the wedding gig. but we put in a good word for elsewhere for
you. You did your best.
I did, Dermot, I did. On sound today was Pat O'Carney, our broadcast coordinator was Elaine Power, our producer was Peter Hegarty, and don't forget to join us again on Monday, just after Joe Duffy's Live Line at 3 o'clock. It's now 4:30 here on RT Radio 1. It's time for Drive Time with Mary Wilson.
Marty Morrissey, weekdays from 3 p.m. RTE Radio 1.